We finally made it. Episode 4 of this fantastic 4-part series. This one is going to be the most bullish of all of them. This is the path to $100 trillion USD, repricing the world in Satoshis. Tina, I'm excited to just jump into this. I think that you've done a fantastic job so far, really breaking down how to invest in Bitcoin, how to think about exponential technology and monetary technology, and really trying to explain what is happening. I think we could all agree that this Bitcoin experiment creates a lot of confusion and there's a lot of noise, and it's really hard to hone in on what is actually happening to the world. Part 4 is a perfect conclusion to what could be the conclusion of this Bitcoin experiment.
Thanks, Christian. Thank you very much. And this has been a lot of fun. I got my first computer in 1982. It was an IBM PC with 64K of RAM and two floppy disk drives. Each one was 360K floppy disk drive. This is really hard for people to imagine. We're not at least in their probably mid to late 30s or early 40s. Probably might have played with these things as kids, maybe older. Bill Gates said that people overestimate what will happen in 2 years and underestimate what will happen in 10 years. And I think that we see this over and over again, that we expect things to happen almost instantly, and then we kind of stop paying attention to things. We don't really follow them closely, and we see major changes. I think you're going to see this in a lot of things. I didn't get my first cell phone until the early 90s, which for me felt pretty late, actually, because people had been using cell phones. But in real terms, I was probably an early mainstream adopter. There are a lot of people in the 25 to 35 age group who I think are actually way too conservative. They think this is going to take a really, really long time to evolve. And I don't think that's the nature of the way things happen. And I also think you add in an added factor of the price of Bitcoin, which is part and parcel of the network effects, because it helps very much to drive the network effects. Investment will come in based on rising price, and excitement will both ebb and flow based on the price. Most people my age don't think about Bitcoin at all. They don't pay any attention to it. They see it on the news here and there. They think, oh yeah, that crazy thing. They think that way about things like Tesla. You got people out there who are very positive on something like Tesla, and you got people who are incredibly negative on things like Tesla. I continue to hear people making comparisons. This is not about Bitcoin, so you're going to give me a little bit of leeway here, because many may disagree with this, and I'm no expert when it comes to Tesla. But they
got some opinions on Tesla.
What's that?
I said, I got some opinions on Tesla.
I do too, actually. They compare Tesla to General Motors, Ford, and others. And I'm not sure that that's the right comparison. People compared Amazon to Barnes & Noble Books, and that was also a mistake. It seems that we go through this over and over again in markets and with technologies, and people have a hard time understanding things. I made similar kinds of mistakes and missed out huge opportunities. We didn't know that the internet felt like it was taking forever to roll out, because we were watching it roll out. We didn't think, oh my God, I wish I could be doing this right now. Or maybe some of us did think that. Rolling out the internet felt like it took forever, but we sort of didn't know that it was taking forever, because we only look at that back in hindsight. And so it's funny, because since the early days of the internet, expectations about speed of things happening become warped and strange. Looking backwards, we think that things happen faster than they might have actually happened. But we realize when we look back that, wow, this happened really fast. Now, I don't know if that makes sense to you. It's hard to explain, but we kind of collapse the time frame that we think things happen. And when we make comparisons to things that are happening now, we say, wow, this feels like it's taking forever. But in reality, it's happening really fast. And I think that one of the things that we have that benefits Bitcoin that was not around for the internet is we have this massive infrastructure which is already built. People have very advanced computers. The problem is maybe they moved off computers onto mobile devices. So we're going to have, a lot of Bitcoin on mobile devices. The internet infrastructure in many places around the world is very built out. People have fiber to their homes. People have high-speed cable internet. Downloading a node is a fairly easy thing, not for everyone, but for many people. It's very easy. And this stuff that we already have that's built out makes building on this existing platform that much easier. So we're waiting for software development, which in real terms is much faster than hardware development. I had dial-up modem in the early 90s. I think it was 24K, then it went to 50-something. I don't remember the numbers on the dial-up modem. I got ADSL, I used something called ISDN, which was designed for businesses. That was a very old technology. I had a T1 line that I ended up using. It took a long time for hardware build out to happen. You know, today I've got fiber and I've got high speed cable. This is a very big deal and a very big difference. You've got building out of mobile internet. And building something on top of this existing infrastructure means things will go much faster because it's software development. For Bitcoin, protocol development means that it has to be very, very robust. And so people say, oh my God, that's taking forever. But it's very important that if you put your money into something, that your money just doesn't disappear because, oh, we screwed this thing up. You've got a project which is building at scale. It's the biggest project of its kind, building at scale. And people can put and have put significant sums of money into this thing, which on the face of it, the idea is kind of crazy if you think about it. You have put $1,000, $2,000, $10,000, $100,000 into magic internet money. That's nuts, right? But you want that protocol to be very robust. You want the people who are working on this and developing this to not botch it up and find out one day that, Bitcoin's not working today, and that's just going to be a problem for you. And so this thing has had an amazing uptime. I don't know the exact statistics on it, but it's
like 99.8 something.
And there's some reason why it's even that.
It was probably early days, too. I'm sure if you look at the last 5 years, it's 100%.
I don't want to jinx it, but it's been pretty amazing.
That's distributed computing network does, you know, decentralization.
And that's really, well, decentralization, but also it's the nature of its development. You have something which is incredibly robust. So I remember looking back to the 90s, and I made some big mistakes. I did not, I liked using Microsoft. I used Excel. I used Word. I was interested in databases. I bought Oracle. I didn't hold these things anywhere near long enough. You had things that went up 100, 200, 300 times, 400 times. And I didn't understand how the world was changing and the big way in which it was changing. These companies were enormous companies in their very early stages. Bitcoin is an extremely big idea, which is bigger. It belongs being measured as a market. It's bigger than any individual company, even though market cap-wise, right now it's not. But it won't be that long before it's bigger than the biggest company in the world and bigger than many companies in the world, bigger than gold. I think ultimately bigger than the stock market, bigger than the global stock market.
Bitcoin is already bigger than some nations.
Well, that's okay.
I mean, these are tiny nations, but just to put it into perspective, like the Bitcoin nation is growing. It's in the top 30 in terms of energy usage as well as market cap. It's actually, they're very closely correlated. The dollars spent on energy and the market cap.
I'm not diminishing that. We'll look back on this and we'll think that this is tiny, that this is absolutely microscopic in comparison to where it's going. And as people come to understand, there's an enormous amount of psychology that comes into Bitcoin. Bitcoiners are bombarded every day with negative commentary. The number of people I see commenting on Twitter, which is pretty regular, who are negative about Bitcoin, the commentary that I hear from people, there is an endless barrage of negative commentary. And that doesn't matter, really. It doesn't affect the building. It doesn't affect many of the hodlers. And the interesting thing is, and this is not technical analysis, but more psychology, when Bitcoin gets over 20,000, finally over 20,000, it may do some testing, I think that a lot of that negativity will dissipate in the minds of the people who are listening to it, because they will start to question what those people who are negative will say. That doesn't mean that those people who are negative will stop being negative. They may, in fact, get louder because they may feel a desperation of having been wrong. Peter Schiff is a perfect example of this. This man heard about Bitcoin and could have bought and owned Bitcoin at $10. And he seems to almost be, he's obsessed. Many of those detractors may become much louder when Bitcoin is over 20,000. I imagine Bitcoin at 100,000, you'll see people who are negative on Bitcoin constantly writing articles, constantly talking about it, saying, this is a crazy, insane thing, and it makes no sense to them. I expect there'll be many people who pretty much lose their minds in this bull market and in this decade, because most people will look at the rising price, and as they begin to understand, the value of Bitcoin actually increases as more people want to hold it. If you start off with 10 or 100 or 1,000 people wanting to hold Bitcoin, it's actually worth more when 500,000, a million, 10 million, 100 million people want to own and hold this thing because they consider it to be of value, because they start to recognize the quality that this has to store their value and are willing to tolerate the volatility because they understand the nature of its scarcity, the qualities that it has as a money, and say, I will deal with that volatility, even though the volatility may seem extraordinary and extreme. But people know that as they move from cycle to cycle, the pain of that volatility greatly diminishes. If you purchased Bitcoin or mined Bitcoin at an average price of $300 or $400, seriously, how much pain do you think you're feeling at the lows of this cycle? $3,000, possibly 9 to 10x where you got in. Are you feeling any pain at $9,500? We're at $9,551 right now. Are you feeling pain at $9,551 if your average price was $500 and you're up 18 times, 19 times your money? I'm hard-pressed to think that anybody's feeling much pain who got in at an average price of $500. People who got an average price of $20 or $30, they're not feeling any pain. Do you think they really care? I mean, certainly it feels better to have more Bitcoin. They have a greater value at $20,000 than you do at $3,000. But the value of what they own have gone up such extraordinary amounts. Do you think Bill Gates says to himself, woe is me, I went down from being worth $100 billion to only $25 billion. Do you think that man feels pain, or Warren Buffett feels pain when their portfolios collapse by 75%? They don't feel any pain. They're still the richest men in the world. So it takes time. You have to ride through these cycles. And as people begin to understand this, I think that we watch the hodler of last resort grow in size. And I don't know what these numbers are. I've asked people what they think. Maybe they grow by 10x. I don't know what that is. But as you go from maybe the first cycle to the second cycle to the third cycle, I think we're in the third cycle, we have many more hodlers of last resort than we did in earlier cycles. And that's really important to value. There'll be a lot of new people who come in. Some will have weak hands. Some will buy up at prices that may make us hodlers feel very good. People who bought, who have an average price of $7,000, $8,000, which doesn't seem so wonderful right now. I was looking, the two-year moving average, if you looked at like 700 or 800 days of a moving average, the moving average price was somewhere in the $8,000 range. So, you know, if you dollar averaged in the last two and a half years, your average price might be in that $7,000 or $8,000 range. At $70,000, at $150,000, you won't be feeling much pain. Now, the guy who buys in at $120,000 and watches it go to 70, at $70,000, at $100,000, $150,000, if your average price is near what the two-year moving average is in the $8,000 range, you're not going to be feeling a lot of pain. And there'll be people who sell out too soon who won't want to ride it down from, let's say, $120,000 down to $70,000. But realistically, you're still up 10x. So it's not going to be particularly hard to hold a position that you own from so much lower prices. And we see this happen with stocks. In the 90s, I underestimated how big these technological changes were. And I got scared out of positions. I made mistakes. And I thought that it was safer to trade than it was to hold on to positions. I might have been better off doing more work, getting a better understanding of what I was long, maybe holding a little bit of a less of a position and not trying to hold on to too big a position that I didn't fully understand so that I wouldn't get scared out of the position. If you're holding a position which is a 5 or a 10 or a 20% position, and you don't understand it to those levels or more, some people might hold a 50% position, then hold a position to the level that you think you understand the thing and hold it to the extent that you can ride through that volatility. We saw quite a lot of volatility in the 90s, and it built to greater and greater levels. There were a lot of people who were very bearish in the 90s. And I was not the only one, but there are many people who were bullish, and there were many people who traded out of positions. We saw a lot of things happen. It was a long period, and you can't sum it up in 2 or 3 minutes worth of conversation. 95, 96, the market was up 70%. And there were a lot of tech stocks that people thought were crazy that got even crazier as the internet boom and the dot-com boom came along. And there were many things which later on crashed. My best trade ever came in late 99, when I came to understand that the Federal Reserve was adding enormous amounts of liquidity because they promised that they would make sure things would be okay for what was then called Y2K, which was a bug that people were worried about, which would make the computers all around the world crash. And I saw, looking at the monetary base and adjusted reserves, that the annualized numbers sometime in October were just exploding off the page. Now, we look back on what's happened since 2008 and this last 10 years, this was really pretty much nothing. But I managed to figure out at that time that what was happening was going to go into the stock market and probably go into tech stocks, NASDAQ. And I bought a lot of stocks and I bought a lot of options. It was probably the single best trade of my life. And I got it right because I understood it. And I got out because I also understood it. And I knew that the Fed would yank all that liquidity out of the markets, which they did. And you saw the stock market crash. I bought a lot of stocks and options in that October timeframe, made a lot of money. I think I was up 60% into year end. Could have been up more, but I didn't want to be long going past the new year. And NASDAQ crashed 40% from like February into March. So I bought and sold, in my opinion, for the right reasons. People were crazy for many tech stocks. And the 90s is so hard to explain to people because maybe not until this last week or so when we've seen Tesla go up literally hundreds of dollars in the last week or two. Have I seen markets that look anything like the markets that we saw in the 90s? And a lot of that was very much related, I think, to a relatively easy Fed policy, not that craziness that we saw in 99 into 2000, but an easy policy before that. And we saw people buy and sell stocks that were going up 10, 20, 30% a day. And it's very hard to imagine that. We've been through different periods. We've seen stocks climb far more gradually, and we haven't seen that kind of insanity in stocks. I think that we will see things that we can't imagine in Bitcoin, because Bitcoin has this fixed supply. It has not only a fixed supply, but an inelastic supply. So as more hashing power comes on, only so much Bitcoin will be produced, because the difficulty algorithm will enforce inelastic supply. So the most you can do is get a little bit more Bitcoin during that period of 2 weeks before the difficulty algorithm makes it more difficult to find Bitcoin and enforces blocks being on the average of every 10 minutes. So as people start to become crazy or buying Bitcoin because they are chasing something which is so constrained in supply, and there are many people who are short Bitcoin, and they will contribute to that demand because they'll be forced to cover, you'll see price explosions that I think people can't possibly imagine. And I think we'll see this the entire decade. I think we'll see a series of booms and crashes. How severe the crashes are, I don't know. I like to say that all surprises will be on the upside. And I think we'll see some truly insane numbers in the next 2 to 3 years, then out to the middle of the decade and towards the end of the decade. What it looks like exactly, I don't really know. It's very hard to imagine. But I think with that, what you're also going to see is you're going to see a lot of money come in the form of investment, like we've seen with Square, that has made investments in open source developers, that has made an investment in Square Crypto. I think they are just one of other companies that will come into the space, hopefully with the right sets of values, like Square has done so far, and spend a lot of money trying to figure out how do we keep this thing from putting us out of business. And I expect literally billions and billions of dollars of investment coming in. That will help build out the infrastructure. Lots of people from the legacy markets, the legacy system, will make major contributions. Hopefully they'll do it with the right value set. Some won't, some will. And this is going to help to build out that whole payment rail process as people become desperate to be involved in Bitcoin. And that's what price does. Price is a signaling mechanism. It's signaling to the world that, hey, better pay attention to me because I'm important. And if you don't pay attention to me, I'm going to run you over. And Bitcoin will run over those who fight it, and it will benefit to an extraordinary amount those who try to understand it and work with it and make it better. There are huge opportunities for people coming in. There are huge opportunities for people to start businesses. There are all kinds of businesses that can be started. There's security-related businesses. We'll need businesses that can store seeds. I mean, imagine if you had, let's throw an idea out there, if you had a business that gave you vaulting and so you could keep your multi-sig in 3 different or 5 different places in multiple locations, around where you live or around the country or possibly around the world. There's going to be all kinds of ideas that people have, and there'll be massive investments that come into this space. And this, we've already seen that, and that's why these market caps are actually incredibly low. The market cap for Bitcoin is incredibly low, considering the amount of investment that is happening now on the part of many companies. And the list is too long, and I don't have a list at my disposal. But we know some of the names, like Fidelity and others that are doing
ICE.
Right, ICE back.
DG Labs, Crypto Garage, Blockstream, A16Z, Bitmain. Companies that compete too. Like, they don't like each other, but yet they're contributing money to support Bitcoin.
Absolutely. This is going to explode. It's teeny tiny right now. But with big moves in price, you will see more and more people come into the space. They will invest enormous amounts of money to keep from being made irrelevant as they begin to understand what Bitcoin is going to do in terms of changing the nature of money, changing the nature of the financial system. We already see hints of this. There are some people in Congress who are already beginning to understand this and recognize that we don't want to fall behind the world. And there will be countries, there'll be some countries that take leadership positions and other countries that fall behind. I live in the United States, and I hope the United States is not a country which falls behind, because if you fall behind in the development of what I think will be a new financial system, a new economic paradigm, it will have lag effects and negative effects for generations to come, and it will be very serious, and people don't want to lose the position they've had. But imagine the most successful horse and buggy whip manufacturer, people that were extraordinarily rich, but they went out of business because the automobile business put them out of business. Look at Eastman Kodak. It went out of business because of digital pictures. They invented digital pictures, and digital pictures put them out of business. I think the first phase of this mainstream bull market is going to mostly be individuals, wealthier individuals, people who are comfortable buying and selling stocks because they're either traders themselves or they're business people who buy and sell stocks and feel comfortable with that. I don't expect institutions to get in a very big way until Bitcoin is much, much bigger. The fact of the matter is, it's not big enough. An institution which manages tens of billions of dollars cannot deploy that much capital in an asset which is $160 billion. They don't want to be 10% of Bitcoin, and they don't want to be responsible for pushing Bitcoin up from $9,500 to $95,000. So we're not going to see big institutions get in, but they will get in, and they'll probably get in a very, very big way towards the middle to the end of this bull cycle, and even more so in the next cycle to come. But the companies involved in this understand that this is not, they're not doing this for the next 6 months or the next year or the next 2 years. They're doing this for the next decade. And they understand that this is a process, and they need to get in early, because those who've gotten in early will have an enormous edge over those who wait and let themselves fall behind. And there are those haters out there. There are those people out there who are excessively skeptical, and they'll fight this along the way. And many of those people will miss out on enormous opportunities. I tell people who are half my age and younger, I think that this is the biggest bull market of all time. I agree with Trace Mayer. This is a once in a humanity opportunity. I mean, that sounds crazy. And people probably think, oh my God, you're out of your freaking mind. But it is. You don't get to see major changes like this happen. And I'll be honest, I'm not a young guy. I don't know if I will be around to see it myself. I hope I am. But these are huge changes, and the opportunities with not that much money. If you could own 100 million sats, that's going to be phenomenal. If you're 25 years old, look, 100 million sats, that's a lot of money today. It's $9,500. That's going to be worth so much money when you're my age. You'll be extraordinarily rich. And this is so hard for people to understand. They think, oh my God, I only have 10 million sats. I only have 0.1 Bitcoin. It's going to be a staggering amount of money. Because the larger this pie grows of people who want to hold it, the more valuable it becomes. And the more people are going to want to hold this scarce asset because they begin to understand what it can do for them. And then as they see the payment rails develop, which you'll see by the mid-2020s and the late-2020s, and these things will be very built out by then we'll move into that next decade of the 2030s. And all this stuff will become very obvious, but the prices of Bitcoin will have gone up 100 times, 200 times, 300 times. By then. So the opportunities won't be the same. Imagine $1,000. You might turn that $1,000 into $100,000, $200,000, $300,000. And I think that's possible. And I know a lot of people out there listening to this who are absolutely, out of your mind. You shouldn't say this to people. It's crazy. But don't plow your entire net worth into this thing. Put an amount of money in that you're comfortable putting in. This is not financial advice. I'm not telling you what to do. I'm telling you how I think about it. And you can agree with me or disagree with me. And you're entitled to do either. I don't really care. Bitcoin does not have to scale to be useful in these early stages. I believe we will see very significant scaling. I think, look, I saw today on a news item that Lightning Labs raised $10 million in a seed. They're still raising money at the seed level. Was it seed? No, Series A maybe. It was Series A. This is very early. You're looking at development of something which is still incredibly early. You've got companies which may be major leaders, which are raising money at the Series A level. This is not even, that's nowhere near close to going public like we see happen with stocks. I don't think people understand how small this is and how big and how fast it's going to grow. But you can HODL your Bitcoin. People say, you're not using it if you HODL it. But if I hold on to my Bitcoin because I consider it to have certain qualities of the best money in the world, and I sell a small piece of it, I sell 5%, 10%, 15% after it runs up 5 times, 10 times, 20 times. Was I using my Bitcoin? I think I was using my Bitcoin. I don't have to use it to buy coffee to use it. Buying coffee doesn't mean I'm using my Bitcoin. If it goes up 20 times and I sell 5% and get my entire invested value out, does that mean I didn't use my Bitcoin? Of course I used my Bitcoin. This is a ridiculous argument that people make. Things don't happen right away. Look at everything in your life. What have you ever done where you started off at ground zero and became a superstar 10 minutes later? I mean, people have craziest expectations. This is a project which also, you know, it's interesting. Being an open source project is unique, and people don't really necessarily think about this. But you have all these eyes looking at this thing. Most things come to market, they've been in development pretty much in secret for months and years before they come to market. They're quite developed. This has been a project which has been out in the open since Satoshi dropped the white paper. So you have people looking at this, commenting, criticizing, telling people what they think about it all along the way. And then much of the work that's been done on it has been done on a volunteer basis. So people's comments, I heard a guy tell me the other day, he said, oh my God, it's taking so long with Lightning Network. This is just ridiculous. I said, you don't know what you're talking about. The paper dropped not that many years ago. And as I just said a minute ago, Lightning Labs just got their, I think their Series A raise. This is insanely early. And yet, because Bitcoin has so much mindshare, because people like me and people like you who are listening to this look at Bitcoin, think about Bitcoin, we think it should be so much further along. And we don't want to understand how early we are. This has an insane amount of mindshare, considering the fact that this little project is becoming enormous. It's talked about in Congress. We have regulatory authorities looking at this thing. It's crazy the amount of attention this crazy little magic internet money thing has going on. It's only been around since the paper dropped, and they didn't start mining it then. It didn't have a price for, I don't know, about a year and a half, 2 years after Satoshi started mining it, sometime in 2010, 2011. And people say, oh my God, that's going so slowly. This is going at incredible speed, and it's going to accelerate. In the 2020s, the pace of this is going to accelerate, because as the price goes up, as more people become interested, as it becomes a bigger topic of conversation, you will see enormous amounts of money invested. We will go to a time where, right now, only guys like you and me talk about this, probably talk about it a lot, but everyone will be talking about it. Most of you who are listening to this may not want to be bothered by all these people that are talking about it and may get new phone numbers because you don't want to be bothered. You know, you were happy to talk about it all along the way, and the people who didn't listen to you are now calling you up all the time. You say, you know, I don't really want to deal with this. It's going to become insane, and insane at a scale that we have never seen, because we think 2017 was insane. That wasn't even warm up. This whole decade is going insane. Not just the
2017 was stretching. Bitcoin is getting dressed.
That's right. Warming up in the bullpen. They were just getting dressed and stretching. HODLing your position as the value grows. This is going to mean that as that value goes up, you're going to see all this interest come in and investment come in. And that is going to be responsible for the growth that we're going to see later in this decade and next decade. I think that money ought to be the riskless asset. And I think that today, stocks, real estate are enterprises, but they've captured store of value, which I think doesn't really belong there. And I've captured store of value because what we use as money is such a poor money. And I think that what's going to end up happening is that Bitcoin as a money will capture that store of value. And those numbers are immense. How much store of value is in real estate? How much store of value in stocks? I don't know for sure, but I think the numbers are enormous. Why do people buy the S&P 500? They buy the S&P 500 because they want to buy something that has less alpha risk. They describe risk in stocks as being alpha risk and beta risk. Beta is the risk associated with market cycles, the risk associated with interest rate cycles, the risk associated with business cycles. It still has all that risk. So you might eliminate the company-specific risk, which they call alpha risk, but you haven't eliminated those risks of cycles. Well, today we use treasuries, the three-month treasury, the 10-year treasury, as the riskless asset. But those are terrible. Those are pretty much directly related to the money that we use. And everybody knows that you don't want to hold on to significant sums of your money for extremely long periods of time. Now, I will give you one caveat. The 30-year bond and the 10-year bond were among some of the best investments of the last 30 and 40 years. So I will give you that caveat. And very few people actually made those as investments. There are a few guys out there who've done so and have done well with that. But from a store of value perspective, many people buy real estate really because they're looking for a way of holding their money. They then take on business risk, the risk of appreciation. Things break, things need to be fixed, the risk of property taxes, the risk of rent collection. These are all business risks. Store of value doesn't really belong in that. Now, that doesn't mean that you shouldn't ultimately be able to make more money with business risk than you can with store of value risk. And you should make more money. You should have a better return with business risk than you do with store of value risk. Store of value risk should have a much lower return. And in time, I think it will. When Bitcoin is the only money, I think that ultimately the value of Bitcoin will go up at what we think of as incredibly small amounts when it's the only money. And people will not necessarily want to hold Bitcoin. They might prefer to hold business investments at that point in time. But if you want to hold your money won't depreciate in value when Bitcoin is the money, because you won't be diluting that value, which is what we do today. And we see extreme moves in markets today because of this extreme dilution that we see in the money that we use. So we see stocks go up by amounts that people consider to be insane. And I think that much of that insane movement is based on the dilution of the money that we use. For me, it's extremely important to try to pay attention to the things that are happening, to the nuance that you see. And it's sometimes hard to chop through the noise to try to get the signal. It's a very, very hard thing to do. We're surrounded by enormous amounts of noise in our everyday lives. I mean, we're constantly bombarded with noise all the time. And most of it's really not worth listening to. And it's certainly not worth listening to in Bitcoin. You need to look for that bit of signal that you find and the understanding that you can find that helps you think about things. You have to understand that for a great investments don't have to be ready right now. They can be things which are still in the process of formation. But what is ready right now in Bitcoin, and I have to stress this, is it's this division between the idea of payment rail versus digital gold. Bitcoin is already here for digital gold. And the value of that is extraordinary. So you shouldn't think that I'm buying Bitcoin, you're buying Bitcoin, because of what Lightning Network is going to do. You should think that you're buying Bitcoin for what the existing Bitcoin protocol is going to do. And the upside to that is staggering. We're in the process of repricing the world in sats, and none of us have ever seen a monetization process. And so we can only guess and speculate how this works and how this might work. And for people who think they understand investing and they understand equity markets, equities are not money. And this can't be stressed enough. You might want a diversified portfolio, but in fact, great investors will tell you don't want that much diversification because you really want to focus your investments. Money, you don't want any diversification. Why do you need multiple kinds of money? You don't. Think about the economic benefits of a world priced in one money. You start to look at how companies and businesses and individuals can compete using one money, and you start one unit of account in which you're measuring everything, it will create an enormous amount of economic productivity. It will completely revamp the way the economy works. If wherever you live, do you want to walk around in your pocket with dollars, euros, yen, pesos, Argentinian pesos, Brazilian reals, Russian rubles, Chinese yuan? You want to walk around with one money. You don't want to walk around with 10 or 20 or 30 different types of money in your pocket.
Today, people just want dollars anyways. Like, they all actually just want one money.
Pretty much right. And there are a lot of problems with the dollar because they're diluting it constantly. And we're seeing that show up, as we know, in stocks and real estate and other assets. We're repricing the world in Satoshis. And I think we'll ultimately go from a debt-based money system to an equity-based money system. Bitcoin is an equity-based money system. I expect that there'll be much less use of credit in a Bitcoin-only world. I actually think there'll be practically no credit in a Bitcoin-only world. Bitcoin is programmable. That's still in very early stages of development. You hear constant comments about this. This is part of the process of what's in development. And people are very short-sighted. People are so turned on by marketing hype. The fact of the matter is there is no marketing in Bitcoin because there's no marketing dollars in Bitcoin because there's not a company here. Bitcoin didn't raise its money in some ICO or some IEO or some pre-mine crap coin. I won't word that word to use. Those people use cheap money to market and to spend a lot of time trying to convince people that they're moving fast and breaking things is the better way to go. I don't think it is. And in time, people who see it my way will, in my eyes, be proven right about this. I cannot get over the fact about how much Bitcoin is already part of the conversation. And it's still very small, but it's an enormous amount of mindshare considering how small this asset is. And Bitcoin is still extraordinarily small. Market cap, $150, $160 billion. And yet we have governments talking about it. We have business people talking about it. This is only going to grow. I happen to be a very big believer in the idea of stock to flow. I think we're going to find that work that Saifedean has talked about in stock to flow, Twitter handle Plan B has talked about. I think we're going to find that this concept of stock to flow is incredibly important for monetization. For me, I think of stock to flow, and for those of you who don't know what stock to flow is, stock is talking about the existing stock versus the incremental new amount of Bitcoin that comes on every year. So currently the stock to flow is around 25. We mine 1800 Bitcoin per day. At 900 Bitcoin per day, the stock flow is around 50. That will double approximately every halving. And I think the association with price is very strong related to these changes in stock to flow. And I think this will remain intact for several more cycles. I see stock to flow as measuring what I think is hodler demand for Bitcoin. When I think about valuation in the stock market, I think that analysts use models to value a security. They come up with a range of valuation for that security based on their analytical models. But then we have valuation, and then we have the trading that happens around that. Markets don't always come to judgments about things that trade in them all at the same time because lots of people have a lot of different opinions on things. I might think something is worth a lot of money. Other people might think it's ridiculously overpriced. And so we have valuation and then we have the trading. And I think of the trading as noise around a point, the point being the valuation, and the trading noise being that noise around that process. Markets are about price discovery. Nobody knows what the right price for something is. We make guesses. That's what the valuation is. We make determinations and guesses of what we think the future is going to look like. And then we try to figure out what that thing should be worth based on how we see that future. We don't know what the future is going to be. We can attempt to value something today to our best understanding, but nobody's perfect. Nobody has omniscience. Nobody can see everything and know that something should be worth X today. Maybe it should be worth 3x today. Maybe it should be worth a quarter, 25% x today. Nobody can know that. That's what markets do. They discover price. I think we're going to find that Some of these things that we use for price discovery are helpful. Some of them are not that helpful. For me, stock to flow is teasing out the information that the markets have given us and helping to tease out what hodlers value Bitcoin at. If we take those numbers, we know that the noise around the way Bitcoin trades is huge. The stock to flow value for this cycle was around 8,000. It started the cycle around $450, $460. It traded up to $20,000. That's a staggering amount of noise. So I think many people look at this and say, they don't know what to make of it. So they say, oh, this is crap. This is nonsense. Maybe they're right. Maybe it is crap. Maybe it is nonsense. It's impossible to know what demand will be in the future. And we know supply, but nobody knows what the demand is going to be. But we all have to make guesses. That's the way markets work. People use the example of the Heisenberg principle of uncertainty. And I'm sure I'll bastardize this thing. The idea of Heisenberg principle uncertainty says you can know where something is at a particular moment in time, but you can't know its speed and direction, or you can know its speed and direction, but you can't know where it is at any given moment in time. We can know certain things about whatever our investments are, but once we know that, the opportunity is gone. 2011, 2012, people who bought Bitcoin had no idea, some did, that Bitcoin would be $9,000 today. Pretty spectacular return. They didn't know what it would look like. They made guesses. That's what we do. We make guesses about what we think the future is. We make guesses about what we think the value is now. We can't know everything. Markets are about discovering this price. I think Bitcoin is worth a staggering amount of money. I think it's worth a lot of money now and today. For me, as I started out with this program, Bitcoin is worth at least one times gold, which means Bitcoin today is worth $400,000, $500,000 of Bitcoin for 100 million Satoshis. I think it's worth well in excess of that. And I think we'll see that in this coming decade. But for me, I think we will see an extraordinary path of hyper-Bitcoinization, and we will see this thing move to numbers that we find extraordinary. I actually think 100 billion, 100 trillion proved to be a low number. I think the number will be well in excess of that in today's dollars. And I think that when you sit down, you think about what this thing already is, and you factor in where it's likely going, that you too will agree with me that maybe the best investment, the best opportunity of your life, and maybe the generations and more. I, for one, am very interested in this thing, and I think that it will be the core of an emerging economic paradigm. I think it will change society. I think it will change governments. And I think all of those things very much for the better. I'm very bullish on Bitcoin. Thanks very much.
And I don't think I need to add too much more. If you guys haven't already followed Bitcoin Tina, you need to follow him at Bitcoin Tina. If you haven't already followed at Bitcoin Magazine, you need to follow Bitcoin Magazine on Twitter. This is CK Snarks signing out. Thanks for listening. Peace. A quick reminder that all of the content in this episode is for informational and entertainment purposes only. You should not construe the information as legal, tax, investment, financial, or any other advice. Nothing contained in this presentation constitutes a solicitation, recommendation, or offer by BTC Media, the Let's Talk Bitcoin Podcast Network, or any third-party service provider to buy or sell securities or any other financial instruments. Do your own research.
Cool. Hope people like it.
Me too. I think they will. They've been waiting for this. So let's see what happens on Friday.
Absolutely. Cool. Thank you, CK.
Yeah. Yeah, this was fun. I'm glad that we could finally finish it.
Yeah, I'm sorry that it dragged on so.
It's okay. This is the first time doing something like this for me, and this kind of gives me an understanding of like how much work goes into it, like creating an outline.
It's a lot of work.
We met like 4 or 5 times just to do that.
No, it's a lot of work. It's really a lot of work, but I hope it's good. I hope people like it. I hope it's good, and I think that you did great. I mean, I couldn't have done this without you, I'll tell you that.
All right.
I'm glad
I added value.
Huh?
I said I'm glad I added value.
Added a ton of value. I felt like a lot of this just felt repetitive to me. I may be wrong, but it's always better to come back with something else.